You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we are deserving of your listens because of our penises and Y chromosomes. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you love the patriarchy as much as we do, please tell a friend. Alternately, you can support the patriarchy instead of like supporting the dismantling of the patriarchy by going to patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon, where you can support us per episode and also exclusive content. Some episodes that are only released on there, you will pay for, such as movie reviews. Other ones, such as random rants from me, you won't, but you are the only ones who will get to listen to them. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, I think it's the source of the patriarchy, Daniel T. Richards.
When is Patreon going to rename itself to Matreon?
That is a great point. That is a great, great point.
Yes, thank you. There is so much farce to witness this week that we had to condense the news segment because it's just overwhelming. We're up to our eyeballs in farce. But I did want to mention there's a story.
Is up to off to a great start so far.
Yeah, that's right. A farcical start so far. One of the stories we're cutting is about Black Panther, and it was about whether or not children should dress up as Black Panther, white children should dress up as Black Panther for Halloween. We've kind of done that story already, which is why we're cutting it about Moana, but there was a line that I wanted to read because it's my favorite line of any story so far this year, which is this. James knows the line, so he's pre-laughing. Which is, white people have the privilege of not constantly being reminded of their race in the United States. To which my reaction was, really? Really? Where? I want to go there. I don't want to be reminded about my race every single day like I am in the United States.
I love when people start a sentence and then contradict it at the end of the sentence. That's my favorite thing in the entire world.
I like how the sentence had an implied you at the beginning of it. Which is, you white people have the privilege of not constantly being reminded of your race. Anyway, great year for far so far. Thanks for joining us here at the Midside. Oh.
Also joining us, as you can already hear his hyena laugh that some listeners have objected to. I remember that comment we got once on the website, but from the hills of white.
Yeah, thanks, Motive Power. You've added so much value. So much value to my Twitter experience.
From the hills of white privilege, where they are never reminded of their race or their gender, James Elias.
That's true. I'm never reminded of my race or gender or sexual orientation in the hills of white privilege because we are all white heterosexual males here in the hills. Gets a little lonely, but you know what? At least we're not reminded of our race.
That's
here.
Right. In your case, James, the hills have Ys.
Ah.
Thank you.
Nice.
That could be a really good horror movie.
Could be a sequel to Get Out. It could be like the feminist sequel to Get Out.
That's right. Because you know we're getting a feminist Get Out. It's coming.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. We already got...
Would that be called Keep Out? And they just, like, sew their vagina shut? Oh, did you see what I did there?
Oh. We're going to move past that, I hope, on this show. And provide some interesting commentary for people.
All right. I'm going to try and be interesting and roll the dice here a little bit right at the top here. Because you know how we're the Chinese knockoff of the Adam Carolla show? And for a while, yes. Adam Carolla was ranting about, what was that, the email from the Amazon distribution people?
Yeah. Where they couldn't send out his DVDs.
Right. And it was just something that didn't make sense to him, and he tried to explain it. Well, I want to do the same thing here with a Twitter exchange that I had, thanks to Midsider William, with Bald Brian from the Adam Carolla Show. And this is just an example of the way people interact that just, it blows my mind. It's not like I'm mad about this or anything. It's just like, why are people like this? Because it's such an obvious mistake to me. So William pointed me to a tweet by Bald Brian about Sucker Punch. And the tweet is basically saying what he thinks of Sucker Punch, where he says, Sucker Punch, while not good, has some value and is at least worth seeing. So I replied to William's reply, which we don't need to know what it is, and I pointed out the obvious contradiction there, and I said, not good and worth seeing are an obvious contradiction, and I did the rolling eyes face emoji. Because to me, this is what I don't like about Bald Brian. I don't care what he thinks, it's just, whenever he says things, he contradicts himself, and it seems like he just needs to be the contrarian for the fact of being the contrarian, which is fine from a production standpoint. I get why Adam has him on the show. It gives him someone to shoot down rather than constantly creating a straw man of Dr. Drew, where he constantly pretends Dr. Drew's a lot worse than he is. I get the value production-wise, but as a listener, it's very hard to listen to. And that's what I said. I followed up with my tweet about the contradiction. I said, honestly, this is the entire reason I only listen to the Adam and Dr. Drew show and not ACS. Bald Brian is insufferable, comma, especially his movie reviews. So then Brian decides to quote that tweet. And this is what he says when he quotes that tweet. My once a week 9-minute movie reviews prevent you from listening to a daily 2-hour podcast? My impact must be greater than I ever imagined! Now here's the thing. It is very clear from my original tweet, if you have basic knowledge of grammar and how communication works, I said, main sentence, main clause, Bald Brian is insufferable, comma, phrase that modifies the original clause, especially his movie reviews. So the point is then that he is always insufferable, which is why I don't listen, but I especially have a distaste for his movie reviews. Now, I assume that Bald Brian is of at least above average intelligence, if not higher than that. So I'm sure he has the ability to understand what I was saying. But by replying, he creates a straw man of what I've said. And to me, this is most interactions and conversations with people who disagree with you, and most interactions and conversations with people on social media and the internet. You can't actually have a conversation because they don't talk about what you're actually talking about. In fact, we saw this with Jordan Peterson in the British interview he did, and also the recent Vice interview he did, where the interviewers would respond to something he wasn't saying. And it's the same thing here. And I have to wonder why. And I can only come up with two explanations. It's either willful, intentional misinterpretation in order to make the other person look bad. And then I also have to think that if they're doing that, it's because they actually are upset that someone was that critical of them, someone said something that negative about them, because they know deep down maybe it's true or something, or maybe they're just upset by it or offended by it. Because I can't think of any other reason to willfully misinterpret something like that rather than just ignore it, especially in the case of Bald Brian. Bald Brian, I have like 390 followers and you have like 22K. There was no reason to reply to that in that way. And to me, all it did was it made him look bad, and anyone who looked into it would look bad. Now, of course, 90% of the responses are, why doesn't he just fast forward through the podcast, past the movie reviews? And only a couple were, he said the whole show, Brian, not just the movie reviews. So it's just interesting to me. It's, why are you replying in that way? Are you really that stupid and missed it? Or am I right and you are willfully misinterpreting it on purpose?
You did call him insufferable. Just want to point that out.
Well, this is why he's insufferable to me. He is not replying to what was actually said. He's making up something I said. Do you get what I mean? This is why I don't like listening to him, because he does the same thing on the ACS show. Adam says something, and then he comes up with some minutia that's related, but not what Adam said. And then Adam has to be like, no, you idiot. This isn't what I'm saying.
That's the humor in it. That's what makes it entertaining. But no, my point, well, I had 2 points. One is he did call him insufferable. Of course, he'd be annoyed. 2, You're surprised that someone you think is insufferable replied in a way that's insufferable.
No. I'm not surprised. I'm just mining this for entertainment value. That's all. And I'm just trying to get to the root of why he is indeed insufferable. So you're saying he just stuck to his shtick? That's all you're saying? Is that this is his entire shtick and he just stuck to it?
Well, I'm saying it's at some point it's not a shtick. At some point it is, as Adam would say. At some point it's just what is. It is who you are.
But why? How can someone be that way? I cannot imagine. I could not imagine living, like, watching a movie and willfully misinterpreting it. Reading someone's communication and willfully misinterpreting it. How can you exist if you're always willfully misinterpreting what people are saying?
Well, you get a job on a show where a guy gets to berate you for 2 hours for willfully misinterpreting things.
See, listeners, what Daniel's doing right now, Midsiders. Yeah, and that's what Daniel's pointing out. And this is the difference between Daniel and I. Daniel can watch a show like, what is that show on Hulu, Daniel, where it's all the awful people, terrible people,
difficult
or whatever?
People.
Yeah, difficult people. I watched 10 minutes of that, and I was like, I can't do this. This is how I see the world. This is how everybody is. I can't, in my free time, I cannot watch more of these people. But Daniel enjoys them because he enjoys seeing them being mocked. And what he's doing is, he's subtly pointing that out about Bob Ryan, that that's what he enjoys about ACS. Whereas me...
It was an interesting... sorry, continue.
No, I was going to say, yeah, don't interrupt me, Drew. Come on. But whereas me, I'd much rather listen to Adam and Dr. Drew, where their conversation is very constructive. And what I mean by that is, even if they disagree, they build towards something and they have some ultimate point. Whereas the other one is just Adam basically calling Brian an idiot and telling him why he's wrong. I'd much rather listen to where it's sort of almost like Adam and Drew's like
Justin,
a discovery of
Justin,
new ideas.
Justin, I disagree.
You disagree
you
with what I like.
I think everything you just said is wrong.
You disagree with what I like. That's what
James
you're saying?
I just think generally everything you said is just wrong right there.
The word generally is confusing me.
I'm doing this on purpose, Justin.
I picked that
Welcome
up what Daniel was saying.
Where we explain all of our jokes.
Okay,
what?
Yes, Ed, what I was doing was, now that this is like fucking the behind the scenes metapod, what I was doing was, once Daniel said that, I was playing into that to let you do that some more. It was improv. I was improvising.
It's
Did
like
you pick that up,
levels
Daniel?
Levels on levels on levels here.
Oh, God.
Works.
No, but.
Say what you were going to say, Daniel, and then we'll move on to the news.
I think it was Adam and Drew's show. You can tell me. I rarely listen to that one versus the other one because I like Bald Brian. But he brought up something that Dennis Prager had said on his show, which is there are sort of generally two types of people, which is people who like to see people who either like to see good people rewarded or people who like to see bad people punished. And the idea is, like, if you had to choose in your world, in your mind, which one of those would you choose? Would you rather good people be rewarded or bad people punished? And in art, I think, and this was an interesting discovery for me, I think I'd rather see bad people punished. And I don't think that's inherent. Like, I don't think that's inherent in me. I just think that that type of art tends to be better in our current culture than art where good people are rewarded. So I like to watch people shows where there are bad people who get what's coming to them.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that. And I think I've just given up on bad people being punished. I think I was where you were when I was younger. But especially as we go, call back to last week, last episode, as we go more and more on campus as a culture, I think I've given up on that. And I just prefer to see the good people rewarded.
Yeah. It's an interesting lens, though. We might have to look through that a little more.
Well, that might be something James deals with when he's talking about his sense of life in art. I think that has something to do with that. So,
sure.
James, keep that on your back burner.
You mean my personal sense of life or like...
No, you said it was a project you were working on. You were considering that. Maybe this will spur on further thoughts for you.
Yeah. I'm always on the lookout for that. And this is relevant, especially for the sense of life of a culture at large.
Yes.
Well, now that we've filibustered for 20 minutes... talking about Bald Brian, the insufferable Bald Brian.
I was going to say, Daniel, now that we're talking about our culture and the general sense of life of the culture, why don't we delve into that a little bit more in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Of course, the news continues to be dominated this week by discussion of what happened at Parkland and the shooting of high school students there. Except that it's taken the political twist, as it inevitably does, where we talk about gun control and what could have been done, what should have been done, what we can do moving forward to stop more school shootings. Well, Joshua Douglas over at CNN had an interesting take on this issue. He writes that Parkland students show why 16-year-olds should be able to vote. Yes, the real adults in the room, this is a quote, are the youths from Parkland, Florida, who are speaking out about the need for meaningful gun control laws. They are proving that civic engagement among young people can make a difference. The ironic part? They can't even vote yet. He goes through a history of cities in the country that have allowed 16 and 17-year-olds to vote, including Tacoma Park, Maryland, Hyattsville, Maryland, Greenbelt, Maryland. Are we getting a theme here? And then Berkeley, California, which allows voting age of 16 for school board elections. So he says, lowering the voting age has the potential to increase voter turnout. Yeah. Huh. And he says, one of the most common arguments against lowering the voting age is that 16 or 17-year-olds are not mature enough to take on the responsibilities of choosing our elected officials. But studies of cognitive brain development prove otherwise, showing that brains are fully formed for, quote, cold cognition or reasoned deliberate decision-making by age 16, which is the kind of thinking needed for voting. So, Justin, what do you think? Should 16-year-olds with their ability for, quote, cold cognition be allowed to choose our elected representatives?
At this rate, with the way our culture is, I don't think 26-year-olds should be able to choose our elected representatives. I think the worst thing we can do is let more people vote. I actually think we need to be thinking about how do we decide who votes? Because it's clear now that people are voting who have no idea what the fuck is going on. It's just absurd. This whole take is absurd. And isn't it pointed out somewhere that this is agenda-driven? Isn't that what some people are claiming as well?
No, it's totally a gender.
Yeah, of course.
The 16 or 17-year-olds are vastly, vastly more progressive, and thus progressives would, quote-unquote progressives, I hate saying that, leftists, would get a bunch more votes if this were to go through.
Right, and that's the main thing, is that's the main thing about this whole thing that's really sort of upsetting, and this is why I have a hard time, because I don't want to be linked with Trump supporters, and I don't want to be linked with the alt-right or whatever calling them nowadays, but it is fucked up to be taking advantage of the trauma that these kids have suffered to parade them on television.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into that in a moment. James,
but it's the same thing here. The only reason is, and James, we'll get to your question in 1 second. The only reason they're saying this 16-year-old thing, remember, is the context that these kids that were 16 are put on television.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a huge part of this, right? If we're not just talking about 16 or 17-year-olds, because we're not taking like a poll of 16 or 17-year-olds in the country and seeing what their informed views are on gun rights and the Constitution. We're looking at 16 or 17-year-olds who are going on television after a traumatic event. And we're saying, oh, look at those kids. They look like they're good enough to vote. Let's let all 16 or 17-year-olds vote. What? Does not follow. Okay, so my question for James was the fun equivocation that they have in this article where he says the common argument against lowering the voting age is that they're not mature enough, but hey, wait a minute, their brains are developed. So he's basically equivocating maturity and brain, like the physical growth of one's brain. What the fuck?
Well... To fulfill my ergon on this podcast, I'm going to reject the essence of your question.
Yes.
I don't know. This is a whole development for me this week, and it'll have to come in stages, like as the podcast moves forward. But I think it's a mistake to look for logical errors in a piece like this. This is just what's that.
I'm cheering because it's like you're finally where I am. It's just like, fuck these people.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of like the journey I'm taking. And apparently you already took this journey. Like,
yeah, you know what it happened just, for me, James?
And I don't I guess I can't get it until I go through it myself. Yeah.
Right. You can't get it till you go for it yourself. And it happened. Go through it yourself. And it happened to me the night Trump was elected, where I was just like, this is all a joke. Nobody knows what they're talking about. Everyone's just running their mouth about what they feel is important. Fuck all this shit. That was the moment for me. And Daniel can tell you that I am different. What is it? BC, BT, and AE. Before Trump and after election. He can tell you that there was like a change in me between those two because of that. Just watching the night of the election, I went through that entire process because I bought into the idea that Trump could never win. And then when he won and everyone was like flailing around like a child, like, oh my God, it was like everyone wore those wacky arm wailing inflatable tube men. I was just like, all right, I'm done. This is all a joke.
I'm just wondering where you find all these flailing children.
It's called America.
Flailers.
There, anyway. It was metaphoric flailing, Daniel.
No,
I don't think I'm in the same spot you are, or like, I mean, I'm like going through a similar evolution, but it's different in major ways. I don't see it as a joke. I'm just like, I'm just shocked at a whole new level at the complete lack of ideology. Just, you know, here we see an article that is entirely a rationalization, just a rationalization for a motive he doesn't want to openly state. Just like, we need to give the vote to people who are going to vote progressive, and that will advance our political causes. And I'm going to give a bunch of rationalizations to do that. Like, to call it sophistry is to insult the sophists. It's insane. Like, it's, well, we already all know it's insane. I'm just past that. This week has made me just really angry. And I mean, we'll get to the whole idea of the gun of, you know, people, you know, making political statements completely from emotion in a second. But what this story tells me is just like, oh, you know, like, facts don't, like, it's not even that facts don't matter. It's just that, like, ideas don't matter. It's just you're going to completely hide your actual agenda, never be actually clear about it. You're going to just, you know, give us a bunch of rationalizations for your position, and you're going to smear the name of science in the process. You're like, oh well, studies show that whenever someone says the word studies show, I like, the exact same emotion comes over me as if someone said, like, I read in the Bible once that, like, well, John 20:17, you know, shows us that, you know, we should cut off our legs, you know, before dinner, you know, or whatever it is. Yeah, it's just the same to me now. And then combine it with the laughable claim that these kids are capable of cold reasoning, cold, objective, dispassionate reasoning. Are you fucking kidding me? And this video you play, like, I mean, I'm going to grant the kids some leniency here because they're just stupid kids, but it is so laughable that you would invoke the idea of cold reasoning in the same article as that video and rant. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot, you guys. There's going to be a lot.
No, I think everything you're saying is great. And what I'm pointing out about what you said is, when it gets to the point that people are just putting forward rationalizations and they're using studies to rationalize whatever they feel, how can you do anything but laugh at that and just be like, this is a fucking joke? Because their communication becomes nonsense. They're not saying anything. They're just saying, this is how I feel, blah, 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 blah. I don't know shit. And that's why I'm saying I laugh at all of it.
I feel like there is something you can do that is productive, other than laughing, although laughing is productive in that it's therapeutic. But there's another thing you can do against this that's productive. And I think we see that in this next article, if you guys.
It's not just therapeutic, though. I agree with you that it's therapeutic, but it's not just therapeutic, because not only does it make me feel better, but it also it makes them so it treats them as they deserve. It's a form of justice. It's like, you don't deserve to be treated seriously. And by laughing at you, I'm reinforcing in my mind that you have no effect in reality. So that it's therapeutic for myself, but it's also just, and it makes them so they have no effect in reality. It reinforces that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to point out that the picture, so the video at the top of this page is insane. The picture literally below this paragraph is titled, Students Stage a Lie-In at the White House. So the paragraph about cold, deliberative, objective reasoning is followed by a picture of students laying on the ground to protest.
But it's also a pun. It's also a pun, a lie-in, because everyone's lying all the time. Like, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's... I wish CNN was that masterful at satire, but unfortunately they take this very seriously. Okay, well, connected to this is another article which I wanted to include because there's so much, which is from the Daily Wire, and it's in fact by one Matt Walsh, who I have a love-hate relationship with, in that some of his commentary is phenomenal and some of it is just dastardly. But this, I think, is on more on the phenomenal side. So he says, yesterday, two survivors from the Florida school shooting went on CNN and accused pro-Second Amendment Republicans of, quote, accepting blood money from the NRA. They declare that those who support the NRA are against children and funding killers. Their claims are absurd, of course, and not in the slightest bit accurate, but they can be excused for their sensationalism. They're kids. They are traumatized. My heart breaks for them. Indeed, I feel nothing but compassion for all the kids who've been giving these anti-gun lectures on the news over the past several days. No decent person to be angry with a child who just suffered such a terrible trauma. I can, however, be angry with the left and the media for hiding behind the trauma. So it is to the latter ground that I say this. You are despicable. It's one thing to bring a child on TV and ask him about the tragedy itself, but there is no legitimate or honest reason to start probing his political opinions. In fact, the article overall is titled, Stop Using Traumatized Kids to Push Your Political Agenda, You Despicable Cowards, which I didn't want to say outright because it's a bit of a spoiler. But, Justin, this really resonated with me, particularly the part that we are now holding up trauma as sort of unequivocal fact or trauma as, you know, to use a word, a Trump argument, which is essentially just like, these people have experienced trauma, therefore what they want is necessarily right. What they want is necessarily what we must do, because they've experienced trauma. That just seems despicable on so many levels. What say you?
You said that now we're using trauma, as if it suddenly changed, and all of a sudden that it's a new thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I agree that it's despicable, but let's not limit it to children. Can we stop using trauma as the barometer of our country? Can we stop trotting out people who have gone through shit and saying that the value of our morality is helping the people who have been through shit? Now, again, this is at the top of the show. You talked about in art, right? How you either want to see good people rewarded or bad people punished. We're talking about, do you want to see good people rewarded, the top rewarded, or do you want to see the bottom helped? And we've created this false dichotomy where by only focusing on the bottom, we have to destroy the top. And the bottom is trauma. This is what nobody wants to say. People who are ending up in these conditions in life have been through shit. We have the opioid epidemic, right? We have the epidemic of broken families. We have the epidemic of shitty school systems. You know, it's the extreme is these kids suffering gun violence, but there are traumatic things that go on in school every day. And we're completely focusing everything in this country on how do we help them and what do they have to say, and they're what matters most. And then someone like Elon Musk tries to send something to Mars and we make fun of him for it. So we take the 16-year-old trauma survivors, all of these trauma survivors who have not coped with it yet, who have not gone through the necessary psychological treatment yet, and we herald them more than we herald someone like Elon Musk. And I'm obviously just creating a quick dichotomy based upon what's going on in the news recently. These aren't meant to be the extremes of both. I'm just pointing out the absurdity here. We need to stop heralding trauma in general. It is despicable to do that in general. I mean, even look at television. Reality TV went from, in the beginning, it wasn't the highest form of art, but you were putting a unique group of people together in different situations. Now you just put on people who have been through traumatic shit because you know they're going to do crazy, unpredictable things, and people are thriving watching people. These shows are thriving on people watching others be self-destructive. That is what has become reality television. That is what our society is based upon. That is despicable. So I agree with everything Matt Walsh is saying, and it even goes a step further.
I think to just clarify one quick point, I don't mean that this is a new development. What I mean, I think, is that it's so nakedly unabashed now.
Yeah, because we let them get away with it for so long. Now they don't have to fucking try and pretend anymore. Oh, well, we don't have to cast good people on reality TV anymore. We're getting enough viewers who tune in when we put the sick people on there. Like, seriously, how do you watch a television show where someone obviously has mental disorders and you're okay with watching that? At a certain point, don't you feel bad that they were taken advantage of by the producers? I even stopped watching Survivor because they made one season all about social justice, where they had a trans person on there. And another person said, not related to his transness, that the person was inherently deceptive. And they kicked him off the show without even voting because they said he was making a statement on trans people. And then the entire edit was built around destroying Brad Culpepper, who was the alpha male, white male, who was once a football player. And they built him up like he was going to win. And then in the last episode, they tried to show he was intolerant of the small Vietnamese immigrant gay guy. And they tried to make it seem like that was what was going on. I stopped watching the show because I don't want to watch a show that heralds this guy who obviously has problems, the small Vietnamese gay guy who was gaslighting everyone. Nobody pointed that out.
Go down too much of a Survivor road here.
It's just, I understand that it's very esoteric what I'm saying if you don't know and know specific. But I'm just giving an example of my personal experience of how I turned off because I didn't want to support that anymore. Something that I grew up watching.
Being a reflection of culture and ideas, it was inevitable that our politics would end up here as well, since politics is also downstream of culture, and Donald Trump has only heralded the coming of the horrible. I keep wanting to swear, and I keep stumbling over words because I'm trying so hard not to swear. So apologies for that not sentence.
You're getting there. You're getting there, Daniel. And I actually think it adds an element of the show to have you be not as eloquent. It makes me feel not as bad about all my fuck-ups.
Well, I continue my ineloquence here. Why don't I just throw it over to James? And I could just say go, or I could set you up. I guess I'm most interested in what you think about all the gun talk this week and all the craziness surrounding that basically guns are just jumping up and killing everyone where they sit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. We are in my... To me, that's not even the main issue. What Justin is taking from this sort of in the realm of values, I'm responding in the realm of logic, but although logic as experienced as a value. Basically, I mean, I agree with this Daily Wire article, except I don't let the kids off the hook. Like, I mean, I grant them some level of leniency to the degree that, like, I'll grant any kid leniency for a mistake. But the bottom line is this: no amount of suffering gives you license to assert your emotions over my personal autonomy. And what is being implied, not so much by the kids, because again, they don't necessarily understand, but definitely what's being implied by the left at large is your mind, what just the mind in general, what our considered judgment about how to solve these problems, and how to weigh that against the philosophy of the Constitution that put in a Second Amendment for particular philosophic, you know, political philosophic reasons. None of what they're saying is none of that matters. We are to bow. You are to bow. You are to sacrifice your mind to what these people want because they're suffering. It's not even the focus on suffering. I mean, like, yeah, that's something to take away from that too, sort of from the perspective of values, Justin. But what I take from it is an attack on on something I personally hold very dear, and that's just logic. It's just. Oh man, I'm so mad. I'm forgetting what it's an attack against our most important faculty. It's an attack against the font that makes all values possible, and it really scares me. Like, I'll give you one example of how I've experienced this personally. I was tutoring a student. And this is a student I regularly talk about, like, oh, you have to use reason. You can't just do like repetition and rote memorization. Like, you have to understand why the math is the way that it is. Like, I'm very much teaching her sort of, you know, in this philosophic way. And, you know, I'm not teaching her philosophy, but she's learning some philosophy from the math, and she gets it. Or I fucking thought so. Because she tells me that she goes out. I mean, again, granting leniency because she's a kid. But she told me that she participated in the walkout at her high school. And I just had to stop. Like, I literally just had to stop and stare into space for like a full like 15 seconds. Because I didn't know what to do. Because this is the way I think about it, is by doing this walkout, you're saying our emotion that's participating in this incredibly evil implication, which is our emotions matter more than anyone's thinking involving how to solve this problem. You are to capitulate to our emotions because we have such strong emotions. We're going to demonstrate our emotions with this walkout. And if you have reasons for disagreeing with our policies, that makes you evil. And I just, it was, and that entire context was just made vivid to me when she told me she participated in this walkout. And I just felt like, oh, like, even my own students, like, they will eat me alive. Like, they will consume my mind. Like, they will destroy me. And that, like, it's so gross. Like, to see this, like, I like this issue especially for some reason just has really ignited this, like, a real fear, like, these people, like, will eat us. I that's how I feel. I know it seems a little extreme, but like, that's what they're saying, is your mind doesn't matter, your personal autonomy doesn't matter, all that matters is that you capitulate to what we feel.
Yeah, it is frightening, and it's so incredible to me how far we have come from the Enlightenment values that we can apply our minds and science and reason to any problem and solve it, to now it's just who has the strongest emotional reaction, they're right. They win. They get to decide the policy. And if you have reasoned, rational arguments, as you said, James, against what they believe, that's of no value whatsoever to them. In fact, it's antithetical to their values. Reason is patriarchal. Reason is logocentric. Reason is Eurocentric. It's all the things that they've railed against, and this is happening to younger and younger people, and it's happening to older and older people, and basically anyone left outside that group is just getting marginalized. It's a little frightening.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I've experienced it as profoundly frightening. And I guess I don't have much more to say about that. I mean, the way you, and I think I, I think there is a way to fight this. Like, there is a way to productively go against this, and this, and it's to just issue an unequivocal condemnation against these tactics, even when used by those who suffer. Like, you don't pull punches. You just say no. Like, your pain means nothing to me. Like, if you want me to sacrifice my mind just because you are in pain, like, you now, again, like, I'll grant some leniency to the kids to the extent that, you know, you grant leniency to kids because they, you know, lack experience. But, like, your pain now means nothing to me because you have threatened my mind on such a profound level. Like, I now have no sympathy for you. Like, I don't care. The fact that you think your emotions trump rational thought on how to solve these problems, it means that you don't care either. It means you're not interested in a solution.
No, they're not.
You're not really interested in the solution. Like, and that's insane because, like, this is coming from some of the parents. Let's talk about the parents who lost kids. Like, the one, well, not, I mean, not all of them, of course. Like, I'm saying the ones, you know, getting up and just calling for gun control and offering no argument other than just like, oh, well, my kid was killed. And therefore, like, you're just supposed to capitulate to my wishes. Like, that is like you, that needs to be condemned. And the fact that they lost someone doesn't matter.
James, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm going to do two things here. One, I'm going to walk you back from the ledge a little bit. And two, which is what I'm going to start with, is I'm going to explain what they're looking for. They're looking for one of two things. Now, to be generous to people who have just suffered a tragedy, such as the parents of gun owners, all they're looking for are the parents of gun owners, the parents of the victims of the of the of these of this mass shooting. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. You talk for so long. I'm not used to not talking for that long, James. Jesus. What they're looking for is they're looking for an end to their pain. That's what they're looking for. All they can think about is they are in pain, and that needs to end, which is fine. It's like if you break your leg, your first thought isn't like, shit, how am I going to like build a staircase? Like, your first thought is, fuck, my leg hurts. Stop it from hurting. But the problem is, this is what Daniel always says about mental health. We don't do a yearly mental health checkup. We aren't taught how to handle ourselves mentally. So when we're in mental pain, when we're mentally injured, we don't know how to deal with that. Now, to be generous to your student, he or she is perhaps doing the same thing. That person has legitimate fear because of what happened, and he doesn't want to be shot up in his school, or she doesn't want to be shot up in her school. So she has fear. So her solution to deal with that fear is, look at me, make it so I'm not in fear anymore. And I get that, but that is a way that our society is still very immature and childish because we haven't learned how to deal with that. Now, the other thing that people who have learned to live with trauma, so it's sort of like if you break your leg and then never get it fixed, you have to learn how to relive. Well, what's happening is people break their leg psychologically, learn how to live like that, and then someone comes over and is like, well, we can fix that leg. All you have to do is this. Except they've learned and they've lived their entire life with their leg fucked up. So they don't want to go through the effort to fix that leg. All they want to do is live with that because that's what they know. And going against that would fundamentally change how they interact with the world. And that is more terrifying at the point when you've gotten used to the pain. So those are the two things. As far as the first group, like your students, to talk you off of the ledge here a little bit, your student isn't seeing it in the integrated way you are seeing it. Your student is seeing it as you are teaching pragmatic skills and how to do something concretely. Even though you are doing the right thing and teaching the student abstractly, that young mind is just saying, okay, this is something different. And then the realm of these other things aren't connected to that. So because of that, they can live a disconnected life, a contradicted life, until at a certain point that it's going to come to a head and something terrible is going to happen to them because of it. And that scares me more for those people than it does for myself. because I know if I suffer a contradiction, especially because I've done a lot of the psychological work, I'm going to be okay. I can reconcile that and the pain won't be too bad. But for these people, they're headed to something bad more than you are. And that's the thing to remember. And I hate it because it's sort of elitist to be like, oh, well, I'm okay. But all you can do is give as much as you can. And I deal with, I say this because I deal with students all the time too. Give as much as you can, but then realize ultimately they have things that existed before you and they're not seeing it in the integrated way that you do.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely appreciate the point about trauma, but and how it may cause you to act, you know, irrationally, not see the bigger picture. But it doesn't change the fact that they're doing something wrong. And if and when some of them get over, well, let's not say get over, but are able to see past the trauma of the moment and see what is required for actually solving the problem, they ought to apologize for bringing the discussion down. Just because they have a good excuse doesn't change the fact that
I am not excusing them. I agree exactly with 100% of everything you just said. It is wrong to put them on television, and it is wrong of them to know they're injured to try and run a race. The race organizer should not invite people with broken ankles to the race, and the people with broken ankles should not go, oh, well, shit, I was invited to this prestigious race. I'm going to race. Because all it's doing is it's hurting the quality of the race, and it's hurting the person who's racing who's damaging his ankle further. I agree with you completely. I am simply observing.
Especially when it's a race.
Oh, 100%. I am in 100% agree with you. I am simply pointing out that this is a broader problem that we don't know how to deal with mental health in this country. That is all I am pointing out.
I think the only thing I'll add to this
I mean,
discussion is that there is at least something telling about the state of our culture that a trauma victim, whether it be for shooting or terrorist incident or any number of things now in this country, one of the first responses is a political one, which is we need government. We need the government to do something about my trauma and about other people's trauma.
Well, I cut my knee. I cut my knee, Daddy. Can you come and kiss it and make it better? Well, that's what happened. They cut their knee with a kid and their dad came over and kissed it instead of saying, ah, it's fine. Rub some dirt on it. That's what happened.
Right. I agree with you. I think there's many levels to it, but one is the sort of general emotional, I hate to use the word immaturity, but that's the best one that comes to mind right now of our culture. So it's revealing and it's all frightening. Something that may or may not be revealing.
Seriously.
To lighten it up a tiny bit. We can always count on Donald Trump to lighten it up a little bit. He really is the master clown of our culture. And in this case, 200 political scientists have ranked him the worst president in U.S. history. That's right. Donald Trump has been in office for a year and some change. And according to the 2018 Presidents and Executive Politics Presidential Greatness Survey, Mr. Trump ranks even lower than disgraced President Richard Nixon, even among conservative political scientists. The study, conducted every 4 years, surveyed social science researchers from the American Political Science Association, and it asked the experts to rank each president's greatness on a scale of 0 to 100, with 100 being great, 50 being average, and 0 being a total failure. Mr. Trump averaged a score of 12.3. bumping James Buchanan, the president who saw the U.S. descend into the Civil War, out of the bottom spot. Justin, is Trump a bad president or the worst president?
I mean, 12.3 is below the legal inflation limit, right? It has to be 12.5, right?
That's right.
So clearly he is a bad president. No, I have a more basic question for you. Everyone knows I'm not a fan of Trump. Everyone knows I didn't vote. Everyone knows, as you said, that he's the master clown. Like, he is the president we deserve, not the president we need. Like, everyone knows that. Like, but here's the question I have for you. If this survey is done every 4 years, couldn't you link it up with the end of a presidential term rather than the beginning? It seems like they fucked up somewhere in starting this survey.
It's assuming that every president serves out a full 4 years, Justin. So we've had some presidents be assassinated and some resign. So I don't know how long they've been doing the survey, but it could be that they, you know, the timeline was messed up a little bit. But yes, your point is well taken. Like, give the guy a shot. Give him a shot to be genuinely terrible.
You just said... You just said some presidents are assassinated, and then two sentences later said, give the guy a shot. Was that subconscious on your part?
I wish I could say it's because I'm that fucking clever, too. But I'm not. That was totally subconscious. I like it, though. I'm not walking it back. I'm not apologizing.
At least give him a chance to get us into a needless world war, you know, like President Wilson did.
Yeah.
Trump could absolutely fuck it up that much, by the way. Like, he could absolutely, it's not too late. He absolutely could make a mistake just as bad, if not worse than that. But let's have some justice and wait until that happens.
Yeah, right. I feel like this is the inverse of what we did with Obama, which is Obama in his like first year or whatever gets the Nobel Peace Prize. And it's like, give the guy a shot to do something, right? Like, don't. And this thing, too. It's like, give Trump a shot to, you know, get us nuked by North Korea. Like, there's time. Give him time to screw things up.
Look, he is one-fourth through his term. Possibly one-eighth through his term. Like, I have no idea. I mean, if he goes against The Rock, we know he's going to lose. But we have no idea what's going to happen in the next election. So he could have seven more cycles, seven more years to be bad or be good. So to say this is just intellectually dishonest. And that's the only problem I have. It's not about supporting Trump or not. It's how can we have any objective merits or any objective standards if we're just saying people are the worst after 1 year? Look, I understand what you're saying about some presidents don't last the full 4 years. That's fine. Then to be honest and intellectual, go, hey, you know what? This is a tragedy, but to do this survey properly, we should do it now. And we're going to change things and do it a little ahead of schedule or a little behind schedule based upon what happened. And it's just, that's all I have to say.
Yeah. Quick question for you two, in case you ever thought about it. Do you have presidents you think are the best and worst presidents in American history?
James? Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Wilson, I kind of just stole this opinion from Yaron Brook, but I know history well enough to really think this is a solidly good opinion. Yaron puts Wilson as easily the worst.
He's pretty bad. I mean, he made the League of Nations too.
Yeah. And he was a racist. He started a lot of a lot of the progressive movement, like welfare state sort of stuff. And yeah. And needlessly got us into a extremely costly war. Like, I mean, Daniel, you thought of like the one thing Trump could do to be a worse president than Wilson, and that's allow us to get nuked by North Korea. Like, that would, but that would only like barely make Trump worse than Wilson, because like, I don't know, just strictly by body count, because I don't know, there were a lot of Americans died in World War I, like, and I'm guessing it would be something similar to the number of Americans who would die if we were nuked by North Korea.
Did Wilson... So,
yeah. Like, you thought of the one thing that would make him worse than Wilson.
Did Wilson do the Sherman antitrust law? Was that Wilson?
That was Teddy Roosevelt, I'm pretty sure.
Fucking Roosevelt's. That's my answer for worst president ever. Not Teddy. It's FDR because he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, seriously. How can we expect him to lead a country if he can't even walk?
Seriously, though, it is FDR because of, obviously, the New Deal. Like, if you look at what that growth of government, I know Wilson started a lot of that, but if you look at how Roosevelt did that, and then also how many fucking terms did he serve? Like, God, dude, step down. Like, just everything about his presidency I don't like. So I think it's FDR.
He may be a close second for me.
FDR is a close second worst for me. And let's not forget, I love doing this whenever people talk about how Trump is the worst president ever. It's like Franklin Delano Roosevelt literally put American citizens in internment camps.
Yeah.
Until Trump does something like that, he will never rank worse than FDR. But
yeah,
Wilson for me, 100%. Not just because of those things, James, but because of the sort of added accoutrement around the things that you just said, which is one, he ran on a platform of not entering into the World War and then did. And then two, he was not only a racist, but he re-segregated government offices. Like they were desegregated. He re-segregated them.
What a douche.
Like complete douche. And then three, he had a PhD. He was a professor, which makes him infinitely the worst president we've ever had. If you get a PhD, you should automatically be disqualified from voting and running for president. The end. Sorry, Iran, but you can't run for president anyway. And then best, in my opinion, is Coolidge, because he had a great philosophy about signing legislation, which is that in his opinion, it was far more important to stop bad bills from becoming laws than it was to sign good bills into law. And just for that reason alone, best president. It's hard, you know, Washington, Jefferson, it's a completely different time period. I think it's hard to include those because they were just making things up as they went along.
You're wrong, Daniel.
I'm wrong?
Yeah, the best president is The Rock.
We will see, won't we? All right. This is the longest news segment ever. Let's try to round this out with a contender for Farcical Story of the Year. Are you ready? The patriarchal race to colonize Mars is just another example of male entitlement. Before you say, what woke or joke-esque site published this schlock? Is it Huffington Post? Is it Slate? Is it Daily Kos? No, my friends. It's NBCNews.com. In their new section called
On Campus Now.
Think. I want you to. The subsection for this piece is called Thought Experiment. I want you to keep all that in mind, that they're couching this in reason. They're couching this in thinking about things. They're couching this in the mind. I want you to think about all that as we're reading this incredible piece of work, which was submitted, by the way, by Midsider Conrad for Woke or Joke, but it was too good not to include in the main show. So
it was submitted by Midsider William for the main show. So William trumps Conrad, apparently.
Well, Midsiders love us. That's what I got out of this.
Midsider fight!
This is the article. This is the article. What does a midlife crisis look like in the 21st century? Fritting away your life savings on a red sports car is so last century. Instead, today's man, who is grappling with the limitations of his mortality, spends $90 million on a rocket to launch a $100,000 electric car helmed by a robot into space. And Musk isn't the only billionaire looking to enter the space race. Amazon's Jeff Bezos has his private aerospace company, etc., etc., etc. These men, particularly Musk, are not only heavily invested in who can get their rocket into space first, but in colonizing Mars. The desire to colonize, to have unquestioned, unchallenged, and automatic access to something, to any type of body, and to use it at will, is a patriarchal one. Indeed, there is no ethical consideration among these billionaires about whether this should be done. Rather, the conversation is when it will be done, because in the eyes of these intrepid explorers, this is the only way to save humanity. Here we go. This is where it goes, as they say, off the rails. Quote, "It is the same instinctual and cultural force that teaches men that everything and everyone in their line of vision is theirs for the taking. You know, just like walking up to a woman and grabbing her by the... It's there, so just grab it because you can." Justin, what isn't furthering the patriarchy?
Pass.
I feel like you could write literally an article with any noun phrase and then just an example of male entitlement or an example of the patriarchy, and it would get published somewhere.
I mean, the thing about this that I don't understand is it's what you're making fun of right now, and it's the lack of the definition of what male entitlement is. Like, how is going to Mars male entitlement? Like, what if hypothetically Elon Musk became trans first and then launched a rocket to Mars? Is that no longer male entitlement? Like, I don't understand. And, like, does Mars just belong to the universe? Is that what this is? And, I mean, to take this to what they're saying when they say the grabber by the pussy thing, like, who do women belong to? I mean, obviously themselves, but, like, is there, like, some Mother Earth Gaia spirit that, like, we're not supposed to pursue women? Like, I don't even understand this article at all. That's why I made the joke about past. It's literally become to the point that there's not even a logic I can make fun of anymore. It's just like, hey, look, they're shooting this thing, this giant penis at Mars, and then the payload is going to be shot onto the planet, and it's going to, like, they're going to impregnate Mars with their car, with the Tesla, and it's going to become a SpaceX baby. Like, I don't even understand.
Daniel, remember the woman it was something about fracking, and the woman asked, like, have you ever considered the fact that fracking is rape?
Yes.
And she didn't, like, elaborate on, like, what she meant, other than, like, the brutal metaphor of just, like, it's rape because you're shooting something into something else.
Yes. Oh, it's even at just about 10% worse than that, James, which is when I asked her what she meant, she meant literal rape. That was her clarification. She meant it's literally rape.
Right, which means she's just referring to, like, well, yeah, you're shooting fluid into an object.
That's right. So,
I mean, the thing that's
you had that like turkey
it's the same physical
at Thanksgiving,
action.
And you got the baster. Well, okay.
The thing that's fucked up about this is what it really does is it disrespects women's personhood. And what I mean by that is when you're calling it rape because you're shooting fluid into the earth. Or you're saying it's male entitlement that's basically raping Mars. The key difference is Mars and the Earth don't have rationality. They don't have personhood. They don't have a mind where they get a choice in the matter. They're its. They're not theys. I shouldn't even be using the they pronoun. It's it. It. And women are people. And it's rape because you're fucking disrespecting their personhood. And you're doing something they don't want to do. That's why it's one of the worst things you can do. It's the worst thing besides murder that you can do. And to equate going to Mars with that is disrespectful to women. And that's the fucking problem I have with all of this modern day social justice nonsense where it's supposed to be supporting feminism and everything. They're doing more harm to women than good with all this crap.
Yeah. It's also it's an interesting question about, like, what would make it not rape? Like, if assuming these people are logical and had reason and actually wanted to make an argument, James, I know you're going to immediately reject that because they're not and they're terrible and they're horrible human beings. But assuming they had some modicum of respectability about their argument, what would make it not rape? Consent, right? Well, how do you get consent from a rock? You can't. It's not possible.
Yeah, those poor red rocks. Right. Those poor red rocks. Haven't we thought about their rights?
I say that with all that rouge, they're asking for it. So, now, the end of this is too perfect not to read. I love this last bit. Here's the last bit for you. Quote, right now there is a robot dummy propped up in the driver's seat of a red Tesla convertible flying through space away from the man-made garbage fires devouring Earth. Houston, we have a problem, and it's the patriarchy.
That's like something Phil Hendry would come up with.
How is this not satire? How is it not satire? One of the more disturbing things about all this is that it's the cynicism that drips off of it that can find no way to take the values of space exploration seriously and the values of what Elon Musk and other people are creating seriously. There can be no motive to this person. I think it's a woman. No motive to this woman other than patriarchal power domination. The idea that exploration could create great things for humankind, that exploring other planets could open up incredible resources that could make people's lives infinitely better. There is no acknowledging of that, even of that as a possibility, in the writing of one Marcy Bianco. She is a cynic through and through, and it reads as this disgusting, not just man hatred, it reads as human hatred. It reads as existence hatred. It just reads as like, I am so angry at the fact that I exist that I have to lash out at everything around me, including and especially at those people who do remarkable things.
That was what I was saying to James about she's gotten so used to living with pain that that has become her entire worldview, is what you just said, the fact that she's in pain. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't care. I hope she lives with that pain for the... I hope she gets worse. I hope she, like... I hope she doubles down on all of the thinking that made her write this and then lives with that for the rest of her life.
The problem is...
I don't know. I mean, that's a silly thing to say. But that's just the thing that, like, comes to my mind when someone is this bad. It's just like, oh, well, like, I'm no longer interested in you becoming better. I hope you get worse.
I get the emotional spirit of where you're coming from. I do. But the problem is, more...
I mean, it's wrong. It's just...
Well, it's wrong from a self-interest standpoint. The more people that are in pain, and no, that's I said that very intentionally. I don't just mean it's wrong for the fact of wanting another human being to suffer. I mean it's wrong because the more human beings suffer and get worse, the worse it will be for all of us.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a good thing to wish for. But right. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes I find myself feeling that way.
I know.
Yeah.
We all do. And when we're talking about that, and we're talking about Daniel wanting to mock these people, that's the perfect transition into what I want to review this week. So let's do that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on. Back in the late 80s, there was one of these John Hughes style comedies, or they used the John Hughes premise to go to an even further extreme. Have either of you heard of or seen the movie Heathers?
No, neither.
Mm-mm.
James, is that no for you as well?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Heathers was a comedy starring Winona Ryder, where she played a girl named Veronica. And she was one of the popular girls in school, and her friends were the three Heathers. But they were really just bullies. So they were these waspy girls who were bullies. And throughout the movie, Veronica's boyfriend, JD, decided to kill the Heathers because he didn't like them. And this was a whole satire parody of teen life back then. And obviously, we see who it was against. Now, this movie is being redone as a television series. And it is being redone on the Paramount Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. If you're like me, you're like, wasn't there a thing called UPN back in the day? Because I remember when I was a kid and UPN came out, the United Paramount Network, and then Star Trek Voyager was on it, and it was all exciting. But that failed so badly, as well as the WB, that they merged into the CW. Well, apparently Spike TV has recently rebranded as the Paramount Network, and one of their flagship shows is going to be Heathers. This is the first episode is streaming live on the website, so I watched it. What they did is so interesting, and it's already being utterly reamed on the internet, which is your first clue that this is probably going to be a positive review. I'm even surprised that this got made. So it's the same premise, except the three Heathers are a gay guy, a genderqueer fat girl, and a black girl. And the whole show is about maybe the new way to be cool and different is to be normal. The first scene is in the cafeteria. The fat one goes up to a football player and bullies him. She points out that he's wearing an Indian shirt that says the Squaws on it, and she tells him to. She takes a picture of him and she tells him to take it off, or she'll post it on social media. And then he takes off the shirt and she says, okay, you have to ask the Christian girl to have anal sex with you, or I'll post it on social media. Then he does all that and she posts it on social media anyway. So it's all about how the social justice people and the tolerant left have become the bullies. And the whole show is showing how everything is crazy and Veronica is in the middle. And she's wondering, why can't I just be normal? At a certain point, she goes, isn't it just enough anymore to be a good person? Now, to be fair to the show and to be intellectually honest, her boyfriend, who, as I pointed out in the original movie, goes around killing these girls, is shown to be bad as well. And his dad is a fracking mogul who collects Nazi paraphernalia. So clearly this kid is supposed to be a product of the alt-right. But what the show is trying to do is be in the middle. So it's not like they're just going after the right with that. You know, obviously I agree with fracking. I don't have a problem with fracking, but I can appreciate how this is done because they're going over the top with everything. Because the other thing to mention about this kid, JD, who wants to kill these people, is when he was young, he watched his mother commit suicide. Like, she looked right at him and then shot herself. So there is the whole element of trauma as well as this show. And this show is definitely not reality, and it's definitely meant to be romanticized and over the top. So based on the first episode, I am excited to see where the rest of this show goes. I wonder how they're going to keep this going, but I think there's a lot of good stuff that could come out of this in the long run, exposing the irrationalities of both sides. Again, I don't like the linking of fracking with Nazis, but at the same time, there is the groupthink on the right as well as the groupthink on the left, which is what they seem to be going after. The idea of just being normal and just being a good person. And we've seen that in society at large, right? With the sexodus and other articles about how teens are having less sex and drinking less. So I think this actually is a good sign, and maybe it's a good omen as to what's to come in our culture.
Interesting. Curious. I'll watch it, I think, at least one episode. And I'm only going to do this because you talked about fracking, which is, I'll have a very micro review of a show I started watching on Hulu called Brockmire. You ever heard of the show, Justin?
No.
It's on IFC. It stars Hank Azaria.
Okay. Which
is already awesome.
Yeah.
Hank Azaria, this is all happens in the first minute, so none of it is spoiled. Hank Azaria, the setup of the show is, he's a famous sports announcer who has a breakdown live during a game. He's a baseball announcer. He has a breakdown live during a game after he finds out his wife is cheating on him, and that goes viral, and it changes his life. It's friggin' hilarious, and it's very dark, though, so I'm not sure you'll like it, ultimately, because it's a laugh-at show, I think. Although it's starting to have a story where it could be a redemption story, which you might be into. But I only bring it up because he ends up calling baseball for Morristown, Pennsylvania, which is in the middle of nowhere. And the team is the Morristown Frackers.
Yeah.
So fracking is starting to permeate the culture here. And then, of course, one of the bad guys is an oil exec who's trying to reduce their ticket sales so that they can build a new waste pit. So they hold events like Free Money Day every time there is a baseball game, where they just give away free money to people not to go. So anyway, very well written, and Hank Azaria is incredible as this sports announcer. He is hysterical. It's enough to watch the first episode just to watch his performance if you just watch that as a vignette or as like a short in and of itself. So
one more time, what's it called?
Brockmire, B-R-O-C-K-M-I-R-E, Brockmire.
See, I would have spelt it with a Y because Oscar Mayer has colonized my brain with their patriarchal entitlement.
Wieners.
That's what I was going for. All right, I think those were a couple of good reviews. And you know what? It's nice that there's actually good stuff out there to watch right now, because there was a little bit of lull in content there. Speaking of new content coming out, let's go on to our next segment.
Trailer Takedown. first trailer.
Cobra Kai is the sequel to Karate Kid that nobody asked for. It's on YouTube Red. And this trailer starts with, like, showing that they're going to restart the Cobra Kai dojo. For anyone who doesn't know, Cobra Kai are the bad guys of the Karate Kid. Although, if you watch that video, they're secretly the good guys, if anyone knows what I'm talking about out there. And the entirety of them restarting this dojo is just stenciling the letters on the wall, because obviously this is on a YouTube Red budget. And then the end of the trailer is the guy who played the villain originally in Karate Kid going up against Ralph Macchio, and they're going to, like, fight. Except when you first see the guy who played the villain, like, you don't recognize him because he's not a recognizable dude. He's just generic blonde-haired white dude. You know, Ralph Macchio is actually recognizable. Except when you look at him, you're like, yeah, you probably shouldn't be on TV anymore. Like, you shouldn't be on the screens. So, for me, this is a hard tackle.
Tackle!
Both of those actors look like they fell out of the ugly tree and hit every heroin branch on the way down. They were nearly unrecognizable to me.
Every heroin needle.
That's right. That's right. Better joke. Thanks,
as James. They fell down the ugly cactus.
That's right. Wow. I just can't even fathom that there is an audience for this. How many people will watch this purely out of hipster anti-valueism, Justin? How many people watch this just because they're like Karate Kid hipsters and they're not watching because they value it?
I have to believe this is the bottom of the barrel of the nostalgia trip we're on right now. When you go down to the YouTube reboot of Karate Kid, that has to be the bottom of the barrel.
I don't know.
I mean, it's going to be bottom of the barrel. Like, I mean, you know, pornography usually, you know, they don't put a whole lot of thought into the scripts and stuff like that and the concepts.
I just can't. It's not even worth tackling.
It's YouTube Red. That's porn, right?
Oh. You're thinking of
whenever
YouTube
I hear
Red
about
Light
YouTube
District.
Red.
Yes.
You're thinking of Red, too.
Yeah, whenever I hear about YouTube Red, I think, like, oh, like, it's just the porn version of YouTube? Is that what they're trying to get me to sign up for right now?
That's called RedTube. That's why you're confusing it.
Okay, that's probably why I'm getting it mixed
yes,
up.
Yes.
Do you think RedTube is suing YouTube Red for infringement? Just curious.
They should. They should sue them for this show. Not the show we asked for, but probably the show we deserved.
That's right.
Tackle.
That's right.
All right.
This would be a hard tackle if it deserves tackling. We need another category. Just like a giant middle finger category that's unspoken, which makes for good pop.
Or like a leg sweep.
Ah, I was going to say that. You beat me to it.
Man, if a man can't stand, he can't fight.
Does
just
anyone
sweep their
think
legs.
That movie was a good movie? Like,
I
it can be
it
fun
when I was like five.
And enjoyable. You can have liked it. Like, I like Pacific Rim, but I'm under no notion that it is a good movie. Anyone?
Right. Yeah.
Bueller?
I was five, so I don't know. I liked that they were karate fighting. That's all I remember.
I'm not going to defend the Karate Kid. You're not going to get that out of me. So,
okay. Just making sure.
Second trailer.
The Dangerous Book for Boys is an Amazon series, an Amazon Prime series, in which three young boys of a single mother are given a book that their father left them. And then this book teaches them how to live. And when it does, in the lessons it gives them, they become fantasies in which the father literally talks to them. Personally, for me, I thought there was a lot that looked good in this. I like the idea of calling a book that teaches boys how to be boys dangerous. I like the idea of concretizing the abstraction of fatherhood in this way. That this is how they show the father parenting rather than just a, you know, if you want to do a story for kids about their father parenting them rather than just like have it be very naturalistic, you have it be this. And I think that's done very well. I like the idea that the actor who plays the father plays a hilarious douchebag on Silicon Valley. And in this, he looks just like a legitimately respectable father. The acting looks good in this. He didn't look like a douchebag at all. He looks super cool. So I am in on this show. I am hugging this.
Hug.
Daniel. When I saw that it was titled The Dangerous Book for Boys, I thought this was the Milo Yiannopoulos movie at first.
That would not be The Dangerous Book of Black Boys.
Oh, right. Yes. So don't confuse those two. No, I actually own this book. It's a cool book. And as a father-to-be, the trailer did get to me. It's very touching. It's not my kind of movie. But that being said, I will try to watch it. I'll try to support it because I want Amazon to make more of these kinds of movies. And this is my prediction. This will be one of Amazon's best performing originals ever. And I say that because people really downplay sincerity and people downplay family friendly. They don't take it seriously. They think it's a joke. The number of people in this country who are starved for that kind of entertainment is far greater than the number of people who want to watch Lobster, whatever that movie was about the guy who turns into a lobster because he's not loved, or, you know, whatever other crap Hollywood is producing. Family-friendly, sincere, non-cynical cinema is in super high demand in the entire country except the coasts. So I think this will perform really well for Amazon, and I will hug it.
Hug!
I agree. James?
I really liked this, too, for all of the reasons stated so far. It was very, very emotional. Yeah, you nailed it, Justin. It's dramatizing fatherhood. I mean, I didn't know that's why I liked it, but yeah, I think that is why I liked that. And so that it very much hit. I should really try this because I do have Prime Video. It hit a spot that needed hitting.
Say it.
Oh, hug.
Hug.
Hit it.
Third trailer.
The Last OG is a TBS sitcom featuring the return of Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan is an ex-convict who gets out of prison and goes back to his life in Brooklyn and finds out everything is different. Obviously, this is a typical fish out of water comedy. This is a typical old person isn't ready to adapt to the new world. I don't usually like Tracy Morgan, but there was some funny stuff in this trailer for me. I especially love the end of the trailer when he's working at basically a Starbucks and that woman comes up with that ridiculous order and he just like makes a noise after her order. I was cracking up at that because that's how absurd the order sounded to me. And for somebody who's never been around to hear them and get normalized to that, to hear them, that's the perfect reaction. I think they're using Tracy Morgan well. I am actually going to give this a chance. I am hugging this.
Hug! Daniel?
It's a great joke. And I don't know if people think what I think of this, but I am unequivocally hugging this. I do like Tracy Morgan. I thought the trailer was well done. And more than all that, I like redemption stories. I don't think we have enough redemption stories. Tracy Morgan plays a guy who went to prison for a long time and really screwed up his life, but now he wants to get better. And the struggle for getting better can be hard. It can be funny. It can be silly even at times, but I like the concept of redemption. And yeah. Hug, totally.
Hug!
James?
I see what you're saying, Daniel. Just it didn't appeal to me. Just this, I don't have
racist.
It's probably because of my white privilege or something, but I just have a hard time relating to, you know, just this setting, basically.
That's yeah, 3 weeks people. In a row. Yeah, I was going to say.
Because I'm racist, but tackle.
That's 3 weeks in a row where you've done something racist, I'd like to point out.
Well, on a streak. Hot streak. Toasty.
Well, I might as... It's never been a better time to be an actual racist, so I might as well. Play my cards right. That's pretty much what Donald Trump said. So I might as well just go for it because it doesn't matter at this point. Daphne.
Pod dog.
All right, next trailer. Daphne, come on.
Final trailer.
The Last Movie Star stars Burt Reynolds as a out of work former box office successful actor who is invited to receive a lifetime honor award at a small award ceremony. He goes and he's the first one who ever showed up, the first box office star who ever showed up. So hilarity ensues because nobody knows how to deal with the situation, I think. This looks like typical naturalistic nonsense about how life isn't worthwhile and values aren't actually good. There's no way in hell I'm seeing this movie. Tackle.
I would watch this if it was a YouTube short where Burt Reynolds played a crotchety old man. I don't think you can sustain that for a movie, especially with the plot of old man goes to small town film festival. Dumb. Tackle.
Yeah, the only thing that worked in this trailer was Burt Reynolds. That's the only reason this is even, the trailer's even watchable. James?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was boring. Burt Reynolds is, you know, fine. Tackle.
Right.
Now I have a question, though. The last movie star, the last OG, is this on purpose? Is this like these are just two sides of the same coin?
Are you saying did I put them in the trailer takedown together on purpose?
No, like are these supposed to be like a pair? They're on different networks, so probably.
What about The Last Jedi?
Right. So I put them in there because I do think it's interesting that our art is headed towards this sort of finality of things. Like we've reached the pinnacle of where we're going to go, and now everything is sort of tracking our downward spiral as a culture. I think the art is starting to go that way. As Daniel pointed out, The Last Jedi, The Last OG, The Last Movie Star. I think we're starting to see that trend in our art, and I think it's worth tracking going forward.
Yeah. That's unmistakable, actually. Like it's happened in like, man, there's all sorts of franchises that have done that, basically. That's really interesting to note.
Yep. You know what else is interesting? Our awesome game that Daniel hosts. It's time for the first one of the year. Woke or Joke.
Welcome, everybody, to Woke or Joke, the game show, where our hosts and you, the listeners at home, have to decide if these news headlines are actual social justice headlines or if they're satire. That is, are they woke or joke? Basically, I'll read three headlines, and after each one, Justin and James get to decide if that headline is woke or joke. At the end of the round, I reveal which one is, and points are awarded. Two complicating factors to make this a little more interesting. One is that you can choose that none of them are a joke, so that they could all be woke. And the other complicating factor is if Justin and James neither of them gets it right that round, I get a point. So I can win, and I'm the host, which is awesome.
Also, if a midsider out there, you submit a news story, and it fools both James and I will send you a t-shirt from themidside.com/store. So that is a reason to submit.
Conrad, we appreciate Conrad's submission, but we did use that story in the main show, so it's not eligible for woke or joke. Because
no shirt!
Woke is.
Stop trying to make my money.
So, gentlemen, are you ready to play woke or joke?
I've been waiting for this for a long time, since last year.
Probably not, let's just do it.
All right.
Round one. Race stuff.
Ugh.
Race stuff.
Headline number one. Meet the dominatrix who requires the men who hire her to read black feminist theory. One more time. Meet the dominatrix who requires the men who hire her to read black feminist theory. Headline number two. Harvard community disappointed after white male selected as university president. Headline number two. Harvard community disappointed after white male selected as university president. And headline number three. When will it stop? Racists have stolen my haircut, favorite shirt, and political views.
What?
Headline number 3. When will it stop? Racists have stolen my haircut, favorite shirt, and political views. Justin, woke or joke?
This is tough. This is tough. Now, I think the Harvard one is real because I just think they would elect a white male and then I think everyone would get angry. But the other two are really tough. And here's the reason. I could see a dominatrix making a man do something. I mean, that's their whole kind of thing, right? Like, hey, you
have
to read this.
I want to point out, hold on. I want to point out that you had one of those pauses that if the phone had died would have been hilarious. You said, I could see a dominatrix.
Yeah, I know. You act like I haven't developed any comedic timing over like 6 seasons.
I just assume.
I've learned things.
didn't.
I listen to Adam and Drew every day. Adam uses pauses to a very good effect. I have learned things. Yeah. So I could see her doing that. But at the same time, would that really happen? Like, wouldn't she immediately lose all her clientele? Like, who would actually take the time to read Black Feminist Theory? But at the same time, maybe it's just a small bit of it that they have to read, like a paragraph or something. So I'm not sure. Or is it during the session? This could be a Vice article or a Vice thing where it's during the session. It's almost too inane to not be real. But the last one, here's where I'm confused about the last one. I get Nazis stealing hipster haircuts. I get them stealing those like ironic button-up shirts they wear and everything, but their political views? Can you read the headline one more time? Is this actually something the right is saying about the left, or is it the left saying it about the right?
Social justice can come from either side. Just we've done a lot of stories like that before.
Yeah.
But the headline is, when will it stop? Racists have stolen my haircut, favorite shirt, and political views.
Okay, I think that one is the joke, and I think that comes from hardtimes.net, because that seems like the aesthetic focus and the focus on the scene. Like, that seems like something they would make fun of someone in even the pop punk or the hardcore scene for saying, because that's, you see those leftist fucking people in that scene where they dress like that, and they would get mad when, you know, like, the bands start marketing those kind of shirts and the non-social justice people start wearing that. So I, not only do I think that is the joke, but I think it comes from the hardtimes.net.
All right. James, woke or joke?
I essentially agree with Justin's case, like lock, stock, and barrel here. I just don't want to believe that I live in a world where headline number one is something that actually happened, where a dominatrix is reading Black Feminist Theory to her clients. But I do want to win, so I'm going with number three as the joke. And I'll even just second, like, yeah, that does sound like it's from the Hard Times.
Well, gosh darn it, you two, you're so smart. Number three is the joke, and it comes from the hardtimes.net.
Nice one, Justin. I mean, yeah, I was just convinced by everything you just said.
Did, like, you know, man, it was the hardtimes.net before I said that?
Oh, no. I didn't. I wasn't sure until you gave your reasoning.
Yes.
And your reasoning was just so solid. I was just like, okay, like, yeah.
All the hours at pop punk shows finally paid off. That site, I swear to God, is my spirit animal. It really pains me that I can't follow that site on Instagram for you listeners, midsiders out there, because sometimes it pops up in my feed and I'm like, if I just click follow, my Instagram feed is going to become so much more enjoyable because I'm going to get that and similar memes. Instead, I get so much pop culture nonsense. So this is what I do for you midsiders out there.
That's right.
But in exchange, we get to play this great game.
Sacrifice for the woker joke. That's right. All right. Round two. Gender stuff. Here we go. Woke or joke. Headline number one. Let's end flannel as a lesbian signifier once and for all. Headline number one. Let's end flannel as a lesbian signifier once and for all. All right. Headline number two. OBGYN ultrasound tech refuses to tell couples whether baby is a boy or a girl. One more time. OBGYN ultrasound tech refuses to tell couples whether baby is a boy or a girl. And headline number three.
Justin had to let that sink in for a while.
No, I was trying so hard not to laugh the first time he said it.
Headline number three. University promotes inclusivity by banning men from the gym twice a week. One more time. University promotes inclusivity by banning men from the gym twice a week. James, woke or joke?
Man. Okay, number two is woke. Like, that just happened. It happened. It also wouldn't be that funny as a joke. So that's woke. The inclusivity by banning men, that sounds like it's woke, but like written from more of a correct perspective, where it's like, oh, well, isn't this ironic that they're promoting inclusivity, blah, blah, blah. You know, but I've failed in this test of cynicism before. So, you know, could be wrong there. And then let's end flannel. Is flannel a lesbian thing? I've never even heard of that.
Justin, do you want to fill him in?
I'm not sure why I'm the expert on lesbianism here. Like,
I figured if there was one of us.
I mean, yes. I mean, who knows? I mean, aren't you better off not knowing what the signifiers are? Like, doesn't that mean, like, you haven't been around a lot of lesbians? Like... And as a male, a straight male, that's good. Like, they all have those things.
I guess. I've come to a decision, though. I think they're all woke.
All woke.
That's my final answer.
Bold move, James. All right. Justin, woke or joke?
They can all be woke, but can they all be a joke?
No.
Oh, no. Okay. Here's the problem I'm having. If you haven't guessed already the problem I'm having, I think number two is the funniest fucking thing I've heard in a long time. Like, I want to see that in a movie or TV show. That's how funny that is. Just refusing to tell the gender. So I want to say that's a joke. But then at the same time, number three, I don't know how a university could get away with that. Like, that has to be illegal. But if it's a private university, there can be private universities, correct? So if it's a private university, maybe it's real. So I have to, just based upon my own spirit and trust my own reaction, I have to say, because I know number one is real. Number one is real. I have to say that number two is a joke, because that has to be. I don't see how any OBGYN would keep that tech employed. I don't see how a person would end up in that position. It doesn't make sense to me, and it's just a perfect setup. It's just it's hilarious. That has to be a joke. It has to be.
Gentlemen, number two is a joke. Congratulations,
yes!
Justin. Well,
what?
Done.
What?
I think,
no.
James, that it is a joke, and it's a good joke because it is going to happen. Like, it's not if this will happen. It's just a matter of time. This will happen.
Oh.
And it is from our friends at the Babylon Bee, writing excellent satire. So essentially, Justin wins by default, but we're going to play round three, because I put in the work, damn it, and you're going to listen to me speak some more.
Wait, how do I win by default? Aren't I only up 2-1?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. James did get the first one right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, if you want to give me the win, that's okay.
No. Sorry, James. I'm bad at what you call math.
What I call it.
That's right. I don't call it math. Okay.
Yep.
Round three. XX stuff. Here we go. Woke or joke. Headline number one. feminist pioneer. This man championed free bleeding more than 30 years ago. Headline number one. Feminist pioneer. This man championed free bleeding more than 30 years ago. Headline number two. The hashtag MeToo conversation erases trans people. Headline number two one more time. The hashtag MeToo conversation erases trans people. And headline number three. Olympian reveals what it's like to compete on her period. One more time. Olympian reveals what it's like to compete on her period. Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, so the first two are obviously woke to me. The only question is if the third one is a joke or not, or if you're trying to trick us. And I'm really torn on this. I'm torn on it because I don't think it's a story anyone would care about. But at the same time, it seems like a story they would cover if it were real. But again, if it wasn't, it's sort of like the last story that I laughed hysterically at, the OBGYN one. It seems like it would happen at some point, even if it hasn't happened yet. But that would, again, make a good satire. So I'm going to take a leap here. And the leap is based upon the fact that I did not hear the third story at any point. I would assume it would have popped up in my Twitter feed or somebody would have tweeted at me or something. Based upon that, I think the third one is a joke.
Oh.
All right. James, woke or joke?
I definitely think the third one is woke. It seems like a weird thing to write a parody on, because then, like, well, because then you have to, like, fabricate an entire Olympian and, like, an entire Olympic athlete just to, that somehow feels like something they wouldn't do. Like, I mean, they certainly could. It just somehow feels like something they wouldn't do. Number two is woke as hell. I mean, come on, Daniel. No, you're doing a good job. I'm just kidding. But, like, you know, that one's very, very much woke. The first one somehow, the reason I think the first one's probably a joke, because it talks about a man free bleeding, it, and like a pioneer,
that's why we play the game,
it's
gentlemen.
Just, number one is just what?
It's why we play the game.
Yeah, number one is just too over the top. Like, I'm just calling BS on it. Like, we haven't come that far yet. So number one is the joke, I think.
All right, gentlemen. I prematurely declared James dead because we are now tied.
Ah!
The first headline was the joke. It is also from thehardtimes.net.
Yes!
It is about Gigi Allin, who's some punk guy.
Well, if you had told me that, I would have known it was a joke. Come on.
It sounded feministy enough that I thought I might get away with it. But I picked the Me Too headline because they used the word erases, which I thought was funny. I chuckled every time I read it. The Me Too conversation erases
funny.
Trans people.
Yeah, right. Like, it metaphysically wipes them out of existence.
Who's the Olympian?
No, the word erases, although funny, like, no, that's totally something they would just fucking say.
Who's the Olympian?
Is Mirei Nagasu.
Okay.
And it's from, if you're curious, it's in the Huffington Post. We'll link to it in case you want to read it. All right, gentlemen, it is tied, and we do, in fact, have a tiebreaker, which essentially is up to Justin to pick whether or not this is woke or joke, because it's his show. And that's what we've decided to do. It's unfair, but so is life. Okay. All right, are you ready, Justin, to decide if this is woke or joke?
Probably not.
Here we go. Insensitive. Black History Month meal sparks outrage. One more time. Insensitive. Black History Month meal sparks outrage. Justin, woke or joke?
Can I ask what the meal is?
You can neither ask that nor phone a friend.
All right, I'm going to say this is woke. This is real.
It is woke. Congratulations. You have won woke or joke. The meal was ribs, beans, mashed potatoes, and French fries.
It wasn't even fried chicken?
And collards and mac and cheese.
See, you should have said that because I would have... No, I would have said woke because I would have said they're making something up, but yeah.
The meal, which was at NYU, was the menu was chosen entirely by black cooks. Just pointing that out. All right, congratulations, Justin. You are the winner of this week's Woke or Joke.
Wait, did you just say... Until next time, everyone. Did you just say Brandon what? Cooks selected the meal? Did you just say that?
No. Although I did consider a football headline for this, which was Jaguars signed Blake Bortles to $54 million deal. That is a really terrible joke for anyone who would possibly get it. But until next time, stay woke or not.
All right, what did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that James has had enough. Basically, this could have been the James has had it edition. Like, he's just done.
Yeah.
Stick a fork in him. Justin's been done for a while. I'm not sure if I'm done. James, done. It's kind of cool. I like it.
Yeah.
James?
What did you learn?
I mean, what I learned is that I could actually reach a new low since, or not like personally, like reaching a low, but just like my evaluation of the culture has reached a low even lower than Trump. Like, there was this big lull for me after, I don't know, probably about 9 months of our Lord and Savior Donald Trump being in office. After about 9 months, I feel like the news kind of like topped out. It was sort of like, oh, well, like anything that's going to be in the news is just kind of a logical result of things I already like understand and I'm no longer going to be shocked by. So I started kind of drifting away from the news for a while. But it is back with a vengeance and farce like you've never seen before. And so I hope you can witness more of it with us.
That's right. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that the Jaguars just tanked their future by signing Blake Bortles for 3 years at $54 million. I didn't know that before you said that. I didn't know. Breaking news. I wasn't sure you were joking or not. I literally Googled that during James's answer.
Woke.
That is terrifying. I'm glad you enjoyed your one trip to the AFC Championship game, Jacksonville.
Yeah, hope it was worth it. If you learned something this week, or if you want to tell us what your woke or joke score was, reach out to us on social media at The Midside everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and now Vero? Are you on that, Justin?
I've been on that for a while. That's the one that if you just want to follow Zack Snyder, you go on.
Yeah. Go on that one. It's all the rave at the moment. And you can tell us if you have articles for consideration for Woke or Joke. Again, if you can submit an article and stump both James and Justin, you will win a t-shirt. A t-shirt! Woo! You can also send me fake headlines. We're into that, too. If you want to write a headline, I'll include it. We're doing that. But I appreciate all the submissions.
That would be amazing.
Yes, write headlines. It would be incredible. We'd love them.
That the writing headlines is included in the free t-shirt from themidside.com/store.
Yeah. Write a headline, stump them, get a t-shirt. That's right. Tell your friends about Woke or Joke, by the way. Personal little plug there for the segment. What else? Tell your friends about the show. Usually we save that for the end, but why? Why bury the lead? Tell your friends if you enjoy the show, then they can enjoy the show too. If they don't know about it, just think about it. You are essentially depriving them of greatness. You are essentially the Wakanda of real life. You are holding all this greatness for yourself. and you are not sharing it with others, you immoral... I almost swore again, but I didn't. I stopped myself. Don't be Wakanda. Share the midside.
Oh, see, I thought you were going somewhere else with that. You were saying you're just like Wakanda, you immoral...
No. But I'm saying, you know, Wakanda keeping all the tech. Same with people who listen to the show but don't share it. They're keeping it all themselves. So, that's not selfish. That's self-destructive. Okay. If you don't want to tell people, that's fine. You can go to iTunes and Google Play, and you can leave us a 5-star review. And you can subscribe there, get the show delivered to the device of your choice. But leave a 5-star review while you're there. Helps us climb to the ranks. Helps us pass Welcome to Night Vale, that piece of crap. And helps us take over the world. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. To all the libertarians out there, shout out Mises, woo! And what else? Oh, Patreon.com/TheMidSide. That's where you can go to help us financially. And it helps us pay for hosting, it helps us pay for advertisements, for t-shirts, but mostly, it helps us keep the lights on. And I want a special shout-out to the light in this room, which I turned on during the show, and man, did it change my mood. I'm sitting here in the dark, kind of like depressed about the gun stuff, turn the light on, instant serotonin increase. Thank you, light, and thank you, Patreon subscribers, for helping us keep it on. So until next time, have a day. Oops, sorry, stepped on your line there.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.